From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the Red River Bridge War, when Texas and Oklahoma battled over a bridge.
It's a reminder of a time when free bridges could mean the difference between survival and starvation.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In July 1931, Texans were wondering if their state was going to go to war with Oklahoma. The two neighboring states were in a showdown over a bridge over the Red River. While many saw the Red River Bridge War as a farcical episode, it was also a watershed moment in the history of the two states. Historian Rusty Williams uses this incident to examine life in Texas and Oklahoma in this troubled time of economic collapse, agricultural disaster, and tremendous transformation. Williams is the author of the book, The Red River Bridge War, A Texas-Oklahoma Border Battle.
It's a Texas story that I'd never heard before. At the beginning of the Great Depression, summer of 1931, Texas and Oklahoma armed up and went to war over a two-bit toll bridge over the Red River north of Denison. It was in a way, treated nationally in newspapers as a comic opera war, but it was deadly serious to the folks that were there. Armed Texas Rangers facing off across the river with armed Oklahoma National Guardsmen.
This could be just a kind of a quirky story of history. What made you think that this was worthy of spending so much of your time and energy and creating a book that is rich in detail and depth?
Because I'd never heard the story, and because I did find it quirky, it got my attention, built my curiosity up. But as I looked into it, I found some elements that were much deeper than that. One is the history of Texas transportation and road building. The struggle for the first 30 years of that century to build miles and miles of roads for the automobiles that came about. Second was the effect of transportation on those that were affected by the Depression. Free roads and bridges could make the difference between starvation and survival during the time.
This was at the start of the Great Depression. This was a time of great uncertainty. Also, we had the Dust Bowl. No social safety net. People were scared, and it was a time of great trouble.
Well, and think of the effect of a toll bridge at the time. Crossing the Red River cost 50 cents. That was the only way to cross over a privately held toll bridge. At that time, a good wage was $2.50 a day. So if someone wanted to take a job on the other side of the river, they'd pay 20% of their pay, 40% of their pay to go back and forth each day. Also, too, those bringing goods to market. On the north side of the river was a lot of peanut growing then. If they wanted to go to a peanut gin south of the river, the cost of their peanuts was higher because of the cost of that toll road. The toll road that was built for very good purposes, it was that crossing there was one that was it goes back to the 1850s, goes back to Texas statehood. The toll bridge was a good thing initially. But it began to hamper agriculture. It began to hamper trade north and south of the river. And that's what touched off the toll bridge war. Texas and Oklahoma teamed up to build a brand new bridge crossing the river, a free bridge. Problem was, going back to the early statehood days, the owners of that crossing had franchises granted to them by the U.S. government, by the state of Texas, and by the Chickasaw Nation before Oklahoma statehood. And they weren't too happy about having their bridge made worthless by a free bridge just a half mile away. Texas had gone through a great period of building, asphalting, grading, trying to build roads. Understand, when the automobile was introduced, when it first came to Texas, there were less than 17 miles of rural improved road. Even by 1928, according to the Texas Highway Department, there were only 18,000 miles of improved road in Texas. And by improved, 10,000 of those were just graded dirt. Today, by contrast, we've got better than 600,000 lane miles of highway in Texas. But that period of trying to get people to – trying to build highways, trying to get to market, brought about that bridge, that free bridge. The toll bridge owners didn't want it. They wanted to be bought out. The head of the Texas Highway Department at the time, a man by the name of Ross Sterling, was one of Texas' first politician oilmen, businessmen who went into politics. Ross Sterling had founded the Humble Oil and Refining Company, the predecessor of ExxonMobil. He had a great reputation for honesty and doing what he was supposed to. The Texas Highway Department, that had started late — we didn't even get a highway department in Texas until 1917, had fallen into financial dirty dealings under the Ferguson administration in the early 1920s. A cleanup governor invited Ross Sterling to head up the Texas Highway Department in 1926, and he was a let's get it done, let's get Texas out of the mud kind of guy. He did that. He came across the toll bridge issue, and the toll bridge owners were going to be holding the highway department up forever with lawsuits. So Ross Sterling made a mistake, probably the mistake of his political career, by signing a contract, entering into a contract with toll bridge owners that he would buy them out, that the state would buy them out. Unfortunately, the contract wasn't vetted correctly. It didn't go through the Attorney General's office and was probably illegal. As the lawsuits from the toll bridge company against states of Oklahoma and Texas melted away, they thought they were covered with a contract. The bridge was about to open. It was apparent on the opening of the bridge, July 1st, 1931, that Texas was going to renege on that contract. As I say, it hadn't been made public, but it was apparent to the toll bridge owners that the maker of the contract, Ross Sterling, who had since been elected governor of Texas, was going to renege on the contract, and he did. They went to federal court and got an injunction to keep that new bridge closed. They wanted it shut off. They wanted to hold Ross Sterling as governor and the state of Texas personally responsible for keeping that bridge closed as they continued to operate their toll bridge for profit. Ross Sterling dutifully assigned a watchman to the south side of the bridge and figured they'd see it out in court. The governor of Oklahoma, though, had different ideas. Understand the importance of the bridge, the people getting back and forth to be able to take their goods to market. They had invested in that bridge, and the governor of Oklahoma, who was a longtime populist, an agricultural man — the civilization begins and ends with the plow, he would say, an old-fashioned guy with a big walrus mustache. His name was Alfalfa Bill Murray. Alfalfa Bill Murray, as governor of Oklahoma, decided enough was enough. He sent a highway crew down into Texas to dismantle the barricade over the free bridge, opening it up. At the same time, he assigned his highway crew to bulldoze the entrance to the toll bridge so it couldn't be used. For 24 hours, that free bridge was open. People were happy. They zipped back and forth on it. Ross Sterling realized that if it were held open, he was liable to federal action for not taking action to keep it closed. So instead of sending National Guardsmen, he considered it, but he ended up sending a group of Texas Rangers to close the bridge and barricade it again. And there it sat, waiting for the for legislation to occur, or waiting for legal action to work itself out. But understand, the people of Denison, Sherman, Durant, there on the bridge, were frustrated. Here was this new free bridge that everybody had paid for, and they were still having to, and the toll bridge was cut off. They had no place to go. People were getting angrier and angrier. Trade was down throughout North Texas. The head of the Dallas Chamber of Commerce was concerned that tourists were bypassing Texas during the heavy season. Newspapers around the country played it for all it was worth. The second war between the states, that closure, traffic backed up for miles. Finally, toll bridge owners decided we're gonna go to court to reopen our bridge. We're gonna go to federal court, and threatened to do that. Oklahoma Governor Murray, in a sense, laughed in their faces. He was a strict constitutionalist and said a lower court can't order the state of Oklahoma or a sitting governor to do anything. Only the Supreme Court can take action. And the Supreme Court wasn't ready to act. The toll bridge owners went to court nevertheless, went to federal court in Muskogee. And just before that court was supposed to rule, Governor Murray activated the National Guard and sent the National Guard down to protect the toll bridge to keep it closed. Now, understand, on the South Bank, there are Texas Rangers armed and looking north trying to keep the free bridge closed. On the north side, just a half mile away, within glowering distance, there's Oklahoma National Guard put there by Governor Murray. It was an artillery company, by the way, carrying World War I war surplus weapons. Now, there's some conversation as to whether or not they actually had bullets, but they were there back and forth. Newspaper men were filing stories from the battlefront. Governor Murray, in response to the threat of federal marshals coming to serve him and open the bridge, went himself down to the river. He packed up a valise and an old hog leg revolver and had his driver take him down. He spent 2 days down on what they call the battlefront, in order to prevent that bridge from opening. Well, things had gone pretty tough south of the river in terms of residents' attitudes. There were mass meetings in Sherman and Denison. They came close to violence. In fact, one of the state legislators said, you know, we got to do something. People are ready to go killing. The state senator for the area was able to ram through legislation at a special session of the Texas legislature that allowed the toll bridge company to sue Texas. Texas couldn't be sued without its own permission, but the legislation would allow the toll bridge company to sue Texas to recover on that original contract. And that allowed the federal judge in Texas to drop the injunction and allowed the free bridge to open. Well, as the free bridge opened, and it was a celebration, there were people marching back and forth on it. There were people dancing. It was a huge celebration to see that bridge open. The toll bridge was still shut down. Governor Murray kept troops on the river. The Oklahoma governor kept troops on the river, not necessarily to keep the toll bridge closed. In fact, what he said was, if people are fool enough to want to pay 50 cents to cross at a toll bridge when they got a free bridge, let them at it. But he wanted to forestall any action by the toll bridge owners to close the new free bridge again. Now, the toll bridge war lasted for 3 weeks there during a hot summer. And as I say, it generated headlines nationwide. The one that came out of it with kind of a stick up his back was Ross Sterling, Governor Ross Sterling. He was a law and order man. He was going to follow the injunction regardless what the people needed. The populist governor, Alfalfa Bill Murray from Oklahoma, was the hero of the moment. He had opened up the bridges. He had taken action, and it was pretty dramatic action, and it was trumpeted nationwide. That led to a run by Alfalfa Bill, starting his favorite son, in the 1932 presidential election. There was a moment there when he had the nomination, the Democratic nomination, in his hand. Unfortunately, at the time, or fortunately, however you look at it, the Texas delegation was able to kind of forestall that, and it turned out that Franklin Roosevelt, very good choice, was nominated, was given the Democratic nomination, came in and was able to affect things relating to the Great Depression. But the Red River Bridge War did a couple of things. It sent one man, Governor Murray, on the road to the White House, took away the political career of Ross Sterling. He was defeated for running for re-election. His plans for to assist people were useless. He was voted out of office. Additionally, it soured Texans on the idea of toll roads. We're going to be paying that kind of money. We need free transportation, intrastate and interstate. And that feeling prevailed until the latter part of the 20th century when states began entering into public-private partnerships and rebuilding or reprivatizing America's highway infrastructure.
This is Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm talking with historian Rusty Williams about the Texas-Oklahoma Bridge War of 1931. Interesting characters, as you tell us. You know, Governor Ross Sterling. He was also called Fat Boy Sterling.
Yeah, he was no fat boy. Every Texas politician has to have some sort of self-denigrating nickname. And Ross Sterling was a 6-foot-tall, 300-pound guy. He was no fat boy along the lines of the Hindenburg. But he was called Fat Boy by his political opponent, the Ferguson, Jim and Miriam Ferguson. And he turned that into a plus. He said, look, this fat boy will work for you. He was a good country boy, not particularly literate, but a good country boy, and took that nickname, political nickname, seriously. And he did try to work for the state. He just didn't have the outlook that was necessary for the times.
And he really wanted to live in the White House. And so when he didn't find a lane to the presidency, he built his own White House.
Exactly. Now, understand, he had made a fortune in oil. He had invested in, Ross Sterling had invested in real estate in Houston early on, developed real estate. He had holdings in oil and had a good deal of Humble Oil and refining stock left. He built a beautiful White House, a duplicate almost, on the coast, on the Texas coast. And later, his family gave that, donated it for charitable purposes. The home's still there.
Right. Legend is that he took the backside of a $20 bill, gave it to an architect, and said, build me one of those.
Hadn't heard that. That's great.
But also, there is no one who can stand up to Alfalfa Bill Murray as a colorful character. And even before the Red River Bridge War, he was just an outstanding, like out of Central Casting, sort of a crazy politician.
This guy was great. Coincidentally, he was born in Texas. He was born in a little community called Toadsuck, which wasn't too far from the Red River, actually. He tried his hand in the newspaper business. He got his law degree. He tried to get a degree he tried to build a practice in Fort Worth. But he read. He was what we now call a polymath. But he, out of work and kind of discouraged and finding no challenges, took the train to Indian Territory. He went to Tishomingo, Oklahoma, and there he found his calling. Oklahoma at the time, prior to statehood, was a place where laws of Indian tribes, federal government, a territorial government, the government that was being founded, all were mixing together. And it was a stew that fascinated him. He found a wife. He married. He became part of the Chickasaw Nation through intermarriage and began practicing law for the Chickasaw Nation. Now, at the time, Oklahoma was talking about, or that is the area that's now Oklahoma, was talking about statehood. There was the Oklahoma Territory, but there was also the area that had been given to the Indian nations called the Indian Territory. It had been given over to the 5 civilized tribes and called Indian Territory. There was a period there when Indian Territory wanted to become its own state, the state of Sequoia. And they were in a race with the people with Oklahoma Territory for statehood. So these side-by-side entities, the Indian Territory and Oklahoma Territory, began to hold conventions, territorial conventions. Alfalfa Bill had developed a great reputation as a legal mind, and he led the Sequoia Convention and to become the Sequoia Territory and eventually the state of Sequoia. He had read, it was said, every national convention or every national constitution in the world. And he developed a great constitution for the Sequoia Nation. Unfortunately, there was an influence in Washington that turned down their vote for territoryhood and statehood and instead said, you need to get with the Oklahoma Territory folks. So they joined and once again had to have a constitutional convention before they can earn statehood. And who should be elected but Alfalfa Bill to chair that Oklahoma State Constitutional Convention. He did a great job of it. He was a political leader, not necessarily what he wanted. He was an agriculturalist. He did a couple of terms in Congress and decided that the future of farming, scientific farming, he could do with his own colony in Bolivia. So in 1920, he set out, he and 85 others set out for Bolivia. They had leased property and were going to build an agricultural Eden there.
A utopia.
Exactly. Ironically, though, they couldn't get their goods to market. There weren't the roads. There wasn't the transportation available to get the goods to market. The colony failed. And Alfalfa Bill came back to the U.S., came back to settle in Tishomingo, Oklahoma, in 1929. Things were changing. There had been the market crash in 27. Alfalfa Bill was not a soiled politician then. He'd been out of the political eye for 10 years. He was kind of the hail hero come home. And as a result, he ran out of the back seat of the car, long shot run for the governorship. Carrying along a big block of cheese and a knife, and he'd stop and have a glass of milk and a big thing of cheese for lunch, going into newspaper, small town Oklahoma, and they elected him governor. So he and Ross Sterling, two very different individuals, became governor at the same time, 1930, facing the same challenges of the coming Depression. Ross Sterling allowed things to local charities to take care of things. His solution to joblessness, he told to a group in Fort Worth, was the jobless people just need to get work. They just need to find work. Not helpful at all. Alfalfa Bill, on the other hand, was facing issues of food riots that were occurring in Oklahoma. They were occurring in Texas as well. But food riots in Oklahoma, farmers who are getting thrown off their land, and he developed programs to ameliorate the conditions of the Depression as best he could. We know the story of the Dust Bowl and of the Jodes being thrown off their land, and that occurred. But Alfalfa Bill was in the State House for 6 years, doing his best to keep folks employed, working, and farmers farming.
But he also sent the State Guard into the oil fields to prevent them from pumping.
Exactly. Well, so did Ross Sterling, as a matter of fact. It was an issue in Texas and Oklahoma that oil prices were way down. Oil was a natural resource of both states, and a tax was paid for it to be pumped out. But if the price was low, Texas was giving away that national resource for very little in tax.
Oil got down to about 2 cents a barrel.
Absolutely. And the solution, in fact, it was Alfalfa Bill's solution, and Ross Sterling followed along, was to send the National Guard down to the oil fields and stop pumping, stop pulling out of the ground. We're gonna ration oil coming out of the ground because we're losing our national resource for very little in tax money. And he did that. Ross Sterling did it too. It turns out that Ross Sterling's was outlawed, and his case was overthrown. Alfalfa Bill's never was. Ross Sterling tried to do the same thing with cotton. Cotton was being overproduced, and didn't make much headway with that. But Alfalfa Bill, over the course of his administration, called up the National Guard 7 times, one of those times even to take tickets at OU football games. The state university, he felt, was being cheated out of ticket revenue that it was supposed to have by giveaway tickets. So he called up the National Guard on a Saturday afternoon and assigned them to take tickets at the game so they could be counted honestly. He was a character.
People came away from the Red River Bridge War with the view that Alfalfa Bill outfoxed Governor Ross Sterling of Texas and that they won. Oklahoma won.
Alfalfa Bill was the definitely the most popular one coming out of it. He had taken action, according to public perception. He had taken action. And it was dramatic action. That story was trumpeted across the nation, and in Texas he was popular. Within a month after the Red River Bridge War, he was invited to speak at the Old Settlers Day gathering in Sweetwater, Texas, and better than 20,000 people gathered to hear him speak and just to see Alfalfa Bill. He went from there to the state fair where he was invited to speak. Once again, crowds thronged Fair Park in Dallas to see him. He was popular, and as a result, donated to the campaign and helped him make his way on to a run for the presidency or for the presidential nomination.
What happened to the bridge, the Free Bridge?
Well, the Free Bridge stood until the 90s. Now, traffic, even that 1931 Free Bridge was a big truss bridge. It's like driving through a lattice iron box. But that truss bridge stood until the 90s, so they tore it down and were going to cart away the metal, except for a woman in Colbert, which is a little community just north of Oklahoma or north of the Red River, along Highway 75. She gathered together members of the Historical Society in Colbert and just pestered the Texas and Oklahoma Departments of Highway to let her have the bridge, let her community have the bridge as a remembrance of that time. And eventually they did. So if you drive from up Interstate 75 from Dallas north to Sherman and Denison, you cross the river, maybe you're on your way to the Choctaw Casino there, cross the river a half mile north of the Red River on the Oklahoma side, look off to your right, and you'll see a section of bridge in the park, in the Colbert City Park across there. It's a reminder, the woman says, of a time when free bridges could mean the difference between survival and starvation, a reminder of the importance of transportation to all of us.
Rusty Williams is the author of The Red River Bridge War, a Texas-Oklahoma border battle. It was 85 years ago, during the Depression, that the two states squared off over a toll bridge and the future of transportation. It's published by Texas A&M University Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, and you can write on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.